Hello and welcome to episode 23 of The Offline Gamer. I'm Matt.
I'm Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
It's just the two of us again.
I know.
Yes, thanks Gareth for coming on our last show, but this is more like a standard episode. We're going to go through some of our normal sections, which are going to be a bit shorter than usual. And we've got a bit of news to talk about as well. E3's just happened, so we'll have a quick look at what some of the big companies announced at E3. So if electronic entertainment isn't your bag, then I think a reasonable chunk of this episode you might be able to tune out. And then we'll talk about some more things we saw at the UK Games Expo.
Yes, our promising prototypes.
Yes. I was thinking, actually, I'm going to have to come up with a funny name for this episode. Because we're talking about E3, I figure that it should be three words beginning with E. So I was thinking something like Entertaining Expo, but then I couldn't think of anything that meant like prototypes that began with E. Experiments, Entertaining Expo Experiments, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
I'll think about that. Well, by the time people are downloading and listening to this, they'll know anyway because they'll see it.
Yep. And then they can hear your thought process.
Yes, they can. It's not a very deep thought process. Okay, so we'll leave the news to later then because it's going to be quite a large section. So let's talk about what we've been playing and stuff since our last episode. So it's been a week and a half since the UK Games Expo.
Yep.
I've had one games night since then at my local gaming store, Asgard Games in Warsaw, often mentioned. And last night we played Scoville, which I'd never played before, which I really enjoyed. So for those not familiar with Scoville, BGG describes it as a auction, bidding, grid movement and set collection game. And essentially, you're playing, I guess, farmers who are trying to grow and crossbreed various types of pepper. And there are various recipes on display that you have to try and fulfill. The more complicated and the more rare peppers they've got in them, the more points they're worth. And you just have to do that. And the person who gets the most points at the end of the game is the winner. It's got some nice mechanics in it. So after the first round, the turn order is determined by players bidding for, you know, where they want to go. But it's not necessarily if you bid the most, you go first. If you bid the most, you get to choose first where you go. And the reason that's important, I'll explain in a minute. So everyone does that, and so you've got the turn order. And then what will happen is, in that turn order, everyone will get to plant a pepper in the field. Now, the board is really cool because it's quite thick cardboard, but there are like indented or cut out little holes for all the peppers to go. And then the peppers are quite thick little wooden pieces.
Yeah.
The more rare the pepper, the taller it is actually. So you can tell just by looking at the board which ones are the most rare because they stick out a bit more. So everyone plants one pepper in the board, and everyone starts with the same three. What happens then is once everyone's done that, in reverse order, people start moving their little farmers around the board. So that's why if you say I'm going to go first, when you have to move your player, you're last.
Okay.
So it's sometimes more beneficial to go in the middle or towards the end if you want to move before anyone else. Each pepper is planted in a square, and there's like pathways between them all. Mm. And when you move between the peppers and up to three steps, and for every step when you land somewhere, you look at what peppers are either side of you, and there's a chart that everyone's got, and then the crossbreed between those two will be a different pepper. So some of them, like if you land between two blues, you'll just get two blues.
Yeah.
But if you land on, like, for example, a red and a blue, you get a purple one. I think that's right. And then you can then plant those ones if you want to try and get the rarer white, black and the ice pepper, which are quite cool little things because they're transparent and see-through. But then some of the recipes, you need like two black, two white and a red or something, you know. So it's do you keep the peppers you've got, the medium range peppers, to buy some of the cheaper recipes on the table, or do you plant some of those ones in order to get the really, really rare ones? But obviously they're really difficult to get, so you might get to the end of the game and you've only bought like one or two recipes, where someone who's been constantly dealing in the middle has got like five or six, but they're not worth as many points. So and then so everyone does that, and then so once you've moved, and then in proper player order again, everyone then gets to choose whether they want to buy recipes, or there's other cards as well that let you like pay peppers to get better ones back and things like that. So, and also at the start of every round, a selection of six cards, however many players there are, there were six of us, so we had six, get put on the board, and each of them has got a pepper or a variety of peppers on them. And in turn order, people just pick one and they get those peppers. So at the start of your turn, you're guaranteed to have at least one pepper every time.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the gist of it. And I thought the production, I think Dave, the guy who bought it, he said, I think that was the second edition.
Yeah.
One of the main differences between the first and second edition was that there's these little tokens, because as you can imagine, with six players, a lot of people have got peppers in their hand, so there aren't many left in reserve, so you get these little tokens that just say, oh, you've got three red or three blue, so there's enough tokens left for when people are, you know, breeding peppers.
Yeah,
but yeah, I really like it. It's by Tasty Minstrel Games. I've had a look online, it's quite difficult to get hold of a copy, unfortunately. Looks like there's a couple of them listed on Board Game Geek, but they're like £50.
Mm.
And if you go on like Amazon, it's like £70 or £80 for a copy, which is like, whew, you know, it's a good game and I'm not paying that much for it.
Yeah.
And is there anything else I need to say? Just looking at Board Game Geek, it's got a score of 7.2 out of 10, which is very good. So yeah, really enjoyable, and I would definitely recommend it. It's not massively complex, but it's good fun, and you can have funny situations arise where as people start moving around, because you can't move through other players when you're moving your little farmer, then you can box someone in so they can't do anything. So, although when we did it, everyone was at one end of the board and I was all on my own down the other end. So, But yeah, it was good fun. I really, really enjoyed it. It's one I'm going to keep an eye open for, and if I can get it at a reasonable price, it's definitely going into my collection.
Awesome.
After we played that, I bought a game, which I played today, and that was Chemistry Flux, which is essentially just normal flux, but the keepers are all elements, and the goals are all compounds of those elements. So, you know, it's like the goal is water, and if you've got hydrogen and oxygen in front of you, you're the winner. Things like that. There's a couple of small tweaks. There's like a card, I think it was, if you can name a compound of the keepers that are all out on the board, then you can pick up an extra card, for example, things like that. Yeah. So there's a little bit of educational element in there as well. But at its core, it is just another version of Flux. And, you know, I love Flux. I credit Flux with getting me into the hobby, so I'm always happy to have another one. I'm quite keen to get the maths one. Especially as Tom Vassell says, that's the only one he likes, because he's not a fan of Flux.
Yeah.
So I'm keeping my eyes open for that. But yeah, that's what I've been playing and buying since, 10 days ago when we last recorded. So how about you? Have you got anything?
The only thing I've played was we played Dragons.
Oh, we did play Dragons. I forgot about that.
Little card game that we... I had a quick go through of last week, in which you have to make four of a row, either of your dragon type or your secret dragon colour. It was quite fun. The art's very nice. It's a teeny tiny box.
I can think of saying maybe it's Connect Four with cards, but it's a bit more complex than that, because obviously you're not only trying to match four of a kind in colour, like Connect Four. You've got the actual design of the dragons as well that you could match either. So
So
everyone gets a... I think it's only a two-player game, isn't it? So you both get a... So there's four different colours and there's four different designs. And the cards are a mixture of all of those. And at the start of the game, each player gets two hidden objective cards, one colour and one design. So that's what you're aiming to get four in a row of. But obviously the other player doesn't know what you're trying to get.
Yeah.
So you can try and bluff them out by trying to make it look like you're going for one thing when you're actually not. That's what I did with you. Was I successful in bluffing you there? Or did you realise I was bluffing?
I guessed you were blue.
Mm.
Pretty quickly. And then I think I guessed which dragon you were a little bit later on, purely because you placed something in a really strange way and I was like, why would he put that there? I thought, well, he's only going to put that there if he's going to try and move that card later, that other card, and that was the spiky dragon.
Yeah.
So I figured it out, but then I had a lapse of consciousness and didn't realise you were making a four in a row down in the corner.
Fair enough. If you do want to find out more about this lovely little card game, so this is one of the games that we got given by the guys at HISPA at UKGE. So for a short, quick two-player game, it's great fun, something to play around the lunch table at work. That's what we did.
Yep.
And actually, just looking on the Board Game Geek page, it says there are two versions, two players, and our cooperative one for four players. That's right, playing in pairs.
Yeah.
So slightly more cards used in the cooperative version, I think. And I think the twist with the co-op one is that you're not allowed to talk to each other. So you have to try and play together, but silently.
Yeah.
Which probably makes it a bit more interesting. So the BGG ID for that, if you're searching for it, because just searching for dragons is very... going to be very difficult. It is number 198991. And that's published by GDM Games, which is run by a guy called Paco, or Pac. And we briefly met him at the expo. And the website for his company is gdmgames.com.
Indeed you do. Which is in Spanish, just FYI, yeah. Guys.
Oh, yes. Well, if they can speak Spanish like you, then they'll be fine.
Of course.
You can sort of figure it out, though, because, I mean, you know, catalogo, okay, catalog. Contact. And, distribution, I think I can figure that one. I don't know how my Spanish accent's going, but there you go.
I'll just let you find that out when you try and speak to a Spanish person one day.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got a few of his games to play through.
We've got
Wake Up Cthulhu and Sugi as well to play.
Yeah, they all look interesting. They all look very well produced.
Yeah.
We've also got that game called The Alchemists, is it? But it's not called The Alchemists, the version we've got, because the front of the box is in Spanish.
Yeah, it's Los Aprendices, which Gareth actually wanted, and then we realised, oh, it's the same game, just in Spanish. Hooray!
Yes, so hopefully we'll have played that by the next time. Because we've got a lot of their games to get through. So
yes.
You may be hearing lots about Spanish games for the next few months.
Yes. But all my games are in boxes, so we need to play something.
Okay, so let's swiftly move on to Kickstarter Corner. What have we backed this month? I've backed one thing. And when I looked at this document, not 10 minutes ago, Ray, it was empty. But you seem to have filled it with lots of things.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be saving up your money because you're moving house.
Well, two of my things are fairly little. And one of them is sort of I love the video game version, so
okay.
I had to get it.
So what I backed was Norsaga Odds and Ends, which is an expansion for Norsaga, which I backed very early on in my Kickstarter journey, about maybe 18 months, 2 years ago, which is a game about building family trees for Vikings. And this... I enjoy Norsaga. I don't get a chance to play it very often, but the two or three times I have played it, it's been very well received. And this was very cheap. You pointed this out to me, actually. I missed it originally when it appeared. It's only $8 plus shipping, which to the UK is only $1. Yeah. So $9 for the expansion, I thought was pretty good. The expansion's got 50 cards in it, and it introduces three new types of cards. You've got these things called heirlooms and immortals, which essentially you get at the start of the game, but you can't use their effects until you unlock them by gaining different types of family, because there's different colours in the game.
Yeah.
And there's also a bunch of new just base cards for the game as well. So it is just a nice little expansion. So if you're out in Norsaga and you haven't seen this, then if you're in the UK, $9. So that's what, £7?
Something like that.
That's perfectly reasonable. And $1 shipping to the US, Canada and the EU, $5 for the rest of the world. People should know my thoughts on shipping costs by now, so I won't go into it anymore.
Well, both of our
Well, I think most people don't want to pay over the odds for shipping, do they?
No. Especially not if it's the same amount as the game again.
Yeah.
I've backed three things. The first thing I backed was a little game called Samhain, which I spotted because our dear friend Pete backed it. In the game Samhain, apparently it's not pronounced Samhain. How is it pronounced, Chris?
It's pronounced Samhain.
It's pronounced what?
Samhain.
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 Yeah. Samhain.
Okay. We are all educated.
Although it is spelled Samhain, if you wanted to Google it. Chris, just chipping in the background there.
Do we trust him?
Do we trust Chris? Yeah. He studied Roman stuff.
It's not Roman, it's Irish.
I know it's Irish, but it's a fight of Celtic people fighting Romans. Anyway, the game itself is based, so it is the Night of Samhain, and Celtic clans are gathering to decide who will be the leader of the resistance against the Roman legions that are advancing. So it's a bit of work placement, and everybody needs to defeat the Romans at the end, but you're competing against each other to be the leader of the resistance. So if you become the leader of the resistance, obviously you are the winner. Oh, and I got it for €13 because I got early bird. So that's even better. So that one is due to come in November. So fairly short campaign. Well, not fairly short fulfillment expectation. And I just thought it looked nice, and I have been starting to enjoy work placement games a bit more. So I thought for €13, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And then the next two things I backed pretty much one after the other. First one is Hand of Fate Ordeals, which if you have heard of the Hand of Fate universe, there's a game, a computer game, which is a computer card game. It's single player, and you play through an adventure by building a deck, to try and defeat the sort of big bosses that this mysterious bloke is putting before you to see if you can win. It's a game of life and death. So presumably off the back of the success of the Hand of Fate computer game, they're now bringing out a physical game, which is, unsurprisingly, a deck builder card game. Yeah. You can play it solo and up to four people. You can also play it competitively and cooperatively, which will be interesting to see in terms of competitive, cooperative. As obviously when you're playing the computer game, it's just you against the game. So the brief, I'll read out the little brief pitch from the page. You are an adventurer who has been chosen to play the game. An ancient artifact of great power that can twist reality and call forth horrors from the past to test its players. You now sit at the table before Kallas, the current holder of the game, to play for his entertainment and your life. Kallas is who you are in the video game.
Right, okay.
Who defeats the other bloke who was challenging you when you were Kallas. You enter the fray given only a rusty axe and the most basic of skills. Trace the steps of your past to explore the vast lands within the kingdom, outwit your opponents and slay the greatest of foes in order to earn the title of hero. And it comes with some little miniatures for the whatchamacallits, bosses that you have to face. And it was in Australian dollars, so it's 79 Australians, 59 US's, which includes a copy on Steam of the Hand of Fate video game, which I don't need because I've already got it. So, Matt, do you want a free game?
Oh.
Yeah, I originally saw Hand of Fate, the video game, from watching YouTubes of a chap called Jerma, who is previously most famed for his TF2 videos. But now that TF2 has sort of been slightly murdered off by Overwatch, he does other stuff as well. So I would advise checking out Hand of Fate, the video game, if you want to get a flavour of what the tabletop version is going to be like, because they're keeping quite a lot of the same mechanics, but transferring them to real-life cards as opposed to digital cards, which I suppose is a fairly easy thing to do, but who knows. So I'm looking forward to that. And they've hit quite a lot of their stretch goals. So their original target was only 30,000 Australian dollars. They've got over 340,000.
Wow.
Okay. That is how you say numbers, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. It's one of those days.
It's so too warm, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah. That's like 1,000%. That's more than 1,000% funded, isn't it?
What was their goal again?
Their goal was 30,000,
yeah.
And they've got 340,000.
Well, luckily, Kickstarter tell you what percentage of funding they're at.
Yes, not on the app, which is what I'm doing it on.
Okay, in fact, they don't on the website anymore. They must have removed that.
Maybe they only do it after it's...
Maybe they do, but it is over 1,000%.
Yes. And then the last thing that I backed was the reissue of Deep Space D6 with new mini expansion, which was only $26. Obviously, if you've already got Deep Space D6, the Endless expansion is just $6. But as I don't have the base game, I thought, oh, I'll get the base game as well because it looks quite cool. It's a solitaire game, which sort of, to me, seems a bit like the Faster Than Light video game, but with dice. It's a self-contained tabletop game designed from the ground up specifically for solitaire play. You take on the role of a starship captain stranded in a hostile space. As captain, you'll be tasked with assigning crew members to various stations in order to deal with external threats like enemy spaceships, as well as internal threats like system malfunctions. So yeah, this is for a reissue, so a second edition of Deep Space D6 plus the Endless expansion, which brings in a whole new threat deck compatible with all four ships of the original. And they've done very well as well. They're originally looking for $20,000. They've got nearly 200,000. They're at 182 at the moment. And since backing, obviously, you get all the updates, they've also added as one of the stretch goals a RPG roguelike light print and play game where you can use the physical game to help you have a little space adventure RPG. So they seem to be doing lots of nice things for their backers.
Okay, cool.
So that's what I have backed. Nothing has arrived for me.
Oh, yes. Well, I've had one thing arrive, which came yesterday, so I haven't even had a chance to take it out the shrink wrap yet. But I'm not going to do that until I'm ready to do the unboxing video anyway. But I got home from Games Night last night, and yeah, found a parcel had been delivered for me, and that parcel contained 10 Minute Heist. Now, 10 Minute Heist is the game where you're playing thieves and you lay a bunch of cards out on the table, and that represents the Wizard's Tower. And you start at the top, and you're thieves, and as you go down the tower, you're stealing stuff, basically.
Yeah.
I haven't even had a chance to look at the Kickstarter campaign since it's arrived, so I, from memory, that's all I can impart on you.
I remember you talking about it back when you backed it.
Oh yeah, I would have done. I was looking at my backed listings to tick off the ones that had arrived recently, and it's interesting. I'm sure if you drew a graph of what I was backing, it'll be an interesting curve, starting off quite high, you know, 2 years ago, and then just tapering off over the last 6-12 months or so.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to maybe have a little splurge again in the next few weeks, if a few things that take my fancy come along.
Yeah, there have been a few good-looking ones up at the moment, which makes it very difficult to
resist.
Yeah.
I think for the last few weeks, obviously because of the expo, I just deliberately didn't really back a lot.
Yeah.
And you've obviously other financial commitments, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Kickstarter Corner done with for another month. So let's stick with board games then, and let's talk about the prototypes and things that we saw at the expo that we briefly touched on. Most of these in the last episode, but we'll go into a bit more depth. Not too in depth, because as I say, we've only seen, some of them we've played, but obviously they're still pre-production copies. So let's start with a game I mentioned as one that I was quite keen to see before we got to the expo, and that was Scrumpy. So Scrumpy is a deck building game designed by Paul Harris and being published by Invincible Games, which is his publishing company. And it's effectively you making cider. So as I've said before, this game to me is great because I like cider, I like games about food and drink, and I like deck builders. So, you know, what is there not to like?
Yep.
When we spoke to him, he said it had two key differences from standard deck building games, and those are listed on the Board Game Geek page for Scrumpy. So just looking at that, it says, the first change, cards in a player's hand, I think, because there's no word there, also serve as the resources that can be produced. So wood, apples, barrels, and cider.
Yeah.
The second difference is cards can be kept active, which means you draw fewer cards each turn. So you're not constantly recycling through cards like you are with most deck builders. So,
yeah.
The art looks nice. When he was demoing it at the expo, he had a nice big player board for each player, showing them where to place their cards. I'm pretty sure that'll probably end up being an extra as part of the Kickstarter campaign.
Probably,
I would imagine. I would imagine they wouldn't give that as part of the base game. It would be like either a stretch goal or probably a higher level pledge for that. And something we didn't realise until you know, we saw his stand during the expo is that Invincible Games were also the people who run HandyCon.
Yep.
Which is a gaming convention in High Wycombe. I am quite tempted to go.
Yeah. High Wycombe is doable in a day, I suppose.
Yeah, it's only straight down the M40. I've just looked it up. And it's the weekend before my birthday as well. So that's... Handycon.co.uk. It's the 11th to the 13th of August. And how much is a three-day pass? £24 for all 3 days. Or £12 a day. So if you get all 3 days, you're getting a day free, basically.
Yeah.
It says here they're running a host of exciting events, such as an 18XX tournament, Scythe tournament, and mass games of Two Rooms and a Boom and Monikers. That sounds
interesting.
Fun. Yeah. I'm entirely tempted by that. So if you want to find out more, it's handycon.co.uk.
We also went to see a very, very early prototype of Dungeon Land, which is based in the 12 Realms universe, from Mage Co. and it's going to be a sort of card-based dungeon crawler. I think we mentioned this last episode as well. And considering how early it looks, some of the cards did already look quite fun, and it looks like it's going to be quite promising. But obviously, we didn't. It was so early; there wasn't a viable, playable prototype there. It was just sort of, "Hey, this is some art. These are some cards. This is some basics. These are some heroes. These are some baddies. This is kind of what it's going to be like." So, if you've played any of the 12 Realms games, you'll be unsurprised to hear that all of the playable characters are characters from folklore and myth and fairy tales and stuff. Again, they all look pretty fun. I think it's going to be. I believe they're coming to Kickstarter with Dungeonland. I'm not sure when, actually. Fairly soon, I think. But yeah, as I say, we didn't actually get to play anything because it was super, super early prototypes. But it looks good.
Yeah, on the Geek, they've got some lovely little pictures of some of the prototype minis, and they look really nice.
Awesome.
There's this, what we got? We've got a witch here. That looks awesome. We've got Puss in Boots.
Yep.
That looks pretty cool as well. Really like the look of that. So if the final ones look as nice as these prototypes, then yeah. I mean, the minis in 12 Realms are really good, aren't they?
Yeah, so they've had plenty of practice in making little character minis.
Yeah. So yeah, that's 12 Realms Dungeonland, which actually is currently live on Kickstarter. I think we did briefly mention this last time. Because while we were there, Helena, the PR person, she was telling us how well the funding was going. So as a time of recording, there's 11 days left. They've already met their funding goal. It's $30,000 and they've got $40,000, so that's good. Shipping is included in the cost. The base cost of the game is $95 US.
I expect that's because it's going to be minis heavy.
Yeah. The early bird pledge was 90, but obviously that's all gone now. The first 100 backers at that level got that. This includes the core box, an exclusive Kickstarter boss, the Crystal Golem, and of course all the unlocked stretch goals. Let's see what stretch goals they've met. 4 Mushroom Knights cards, 4 Trickster Goblin cards, more of those, more of those, more of those. Lots of different types of cards. Oh, when they reach $55,000, that you unlock the Giant Ogre Mega Boss. Ooh. And then if they reach 60,000, they unlock the Cyclops Mega Boss. I don't know if they're cards or minis. At that sort of level, I would guess they're minis.
Probably.
So yeah, I mean, if you've tried 12 Realms and enjoyed it, then you'll probably enjoy this, especially if you like the theme, or if you've got kids that like that sort of universe, then you know this will appeal to them. So yeah, that's 12 Realms Dungeonland from Mage Company. Next up is one that we had pre-arranged to play. We got to play this for about an hour. Unfortunately, we had to dash off halfway through our game, so we didn't get to play a full game. And that was Lander. So first of all, they've got a website up, landerthegame.co.uk. Their Kickstarter campaign is going to launch next year sometime. We got to play a prototype which was 3D printed, so the general design of the physical pieces was probably quite close to what the actual game is going to be like, but the cards that we were using, the guy said, you know, we're going to have a proper artist in to do these. At the moment, we're just using pictures of random people we found on the internet. So,
yeah, so I got to be Mads Mikkelsen's Hannibal Lecter.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But I was actually a British engineer.
So let's read off the overview from the website. So in Lander, each player assumes the role of one of 6 corporations that funded the Global Corporation Coalition, the GCC. The objective of the game is simple: achieve the most mission stars in 5 rounds of colonization to win. To do this, you must cultivate the planet and develop your crew so that you have the resources, skills, and traits necessary to complete missions assigned by command. Base game can be played with 2-4 players, and a 5-6 player expansion will be available. So I really enjoyed this, I have to say. I'm almost certain to back this when it comes on Kickstarter. I like the physical, the little pieces. So I'll try and describe it to you. You've got a piece in the middle of the board, which is a hexagon, which is like the crash site. So that's got like debris and little bits of space rock and things on there. And then all the other pieces that go around it are triangular, and they all interlock with each other. And each one is a different type of resource. So what was it? There's food, energy, and what was the other one? Minerals, was it?
Yeah, there was steel. Yeah, it's like food, energy, and steel, I think.
There's pictures of most of this stuff on their website anyway, if we're not doing a very good job of explaining it. And then each of these tiles has got three numbers on it. And then the first number is what you get of that resource if you've got one structure on that tile. So some of them will give you one resource if you've got one thing on it. Some of them will give you none. Some of them will give you two. And then the second number is what you get if you've got two resources on that. And then the third number is what you've got if you get three resources on it. And some of them start off very low and then immediately jump up quite high if you get if you get three things on there. But then also some of them start off at a sort of medium level, but they don't really increase very much. So you can say, okay, I'll have this one and consistently get a reasonable amount, or I'll try and climb this tile and get a little bit of resources at the moment, but if I can put more things on it, then I'll get more as the game goes on. And the way you climb them is by exploring them. So at the start of the game, you put three of your little structures on three tiles. As the game goes on, you can explore, but you can only explore on a tile that's adjacent to one that you've already got a piece on. I think that's right. And then you use those resources to get crew members and upgrade those crew members. And some of them are specialised in different fields like engineering or science. And some of them have got different traits like diplomacy or innovation. And you use those traits and things that you've got to complete missions. And the missions are your objective, and missions give you points. And the end game condition is that after the fifth round is everyone counts up how many points they've got for the missions they've completed, and then the person who gets the most points is the winner. Simples. But you know, there's a lot of strategy involved in where do you claim. So it's, you know, the rules aren't that simple. It didn't take long for the guy to explain it to us, and I think we got into it pretty quickly. And I think after a couple of, you know, goes, we were, I think we'd got it all sussed out and we knew what we were trying to do. And you were winning quite considerably, I think, when we ended the game, weren't you? Because you kept killing my crew.
Yeah, but then you swapped my leader with your leader and yours was not as good as mine.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that's landerthegame.co.uk. And keep your eyes open for that, launching on Kickstarter sometime next year.
We also went to see Burning Games to play a little bit of Aether Wars. We actually sort of got to play a fairly full game. We did play the full game.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah, all the way through. Sadly, we were both beaten by the creator, of course.
I don't know if Jon was the creator. Wasn't the other guy the creator?
I'm not sure. I think they're both from Burning Games, yeah. So obviously they're going to know the game better than us.
Absolutely.
But he won. And this prototype looked fairly finished to me. So you're playing for, you're mining on a planet to get resources. And the win condition is that you get X amount of ether which is the prize resource. For three player game, I think we had to get 6 ether.
Yep.
And so you have, I think there's 3 different resources, and then you have proteins, which help you feed your men, energy, which you can trade in to do other bits and pieces, and then you also get mercenaries that you can hire if you have the right resources to hire them. And the mercenaries add a little bit of extra tactics. So your men are represented by little d6s, and you have one who's like a heroic, one who's a slightly bigger die. They are custom dice because they have a special symbol on them, which means that you can activate your corporation power or your player power and gain some extra bits and bobs. So basically the board is split up into different sections, so sections for all of the resources and then protein, and then basically everybody takes a turn placing their men around the board, and then you resolve in turn order. But if you end up having to have a fight over some of the resources, then obviously that triggers you have to jump in and start rolling your dice to see if you win the rights to that particular mining area for that turn. And then some of the mercenaries can do things like kill one of your opponent's dice before they roll. One of them guarantees you to mine some minerals. It's one that offers you the ability to defend yourself, because you can also be attacked and people can steal minerals directly from you. I can't remember many of the mercenary powers now. There was 8, I think, different mercenaries that you could possibly
two
pick
of each.
From.
No, 6, because there were 2 of each colour, weren't there?
Yeah. So there's a few mercenaries you can pick from. You obviously don't have to get a mercenary if you can't afford one. And then each of the resources will also do something for you. So one of them will allow you to heal one of your guys if they die, so they go back to your player mat as opposed to being, I don't know, back on the ship, bit laid up in hospital. One of them allows you to double the amount of ether you can draw if you are in control of the ether mine. One of them allows you to swap men around or dice before resolution phases. And then in addition to having your armies, as it were, you also can draw favour cards, which are sort of like instants that you can sort of say, ah, I'm going to double the amount that I can draw on this turn from this mine, or I'm going to pay this and I'm going to kill one of your guys. And then aside from the instance, you also have a small deck, which is, I can't remember how he described it, but it's like the daily forecast for the day that you're, because you play in a certain number, you play as a day, each round is a day. So at the beginning of a new round, you will draw the daily forecast and it will say, so some sort of condition that will affect everybody. So, for example, today, protein, you only get half of what you would otherwise get, or double, or everybody gets one less guy. I don't know. There were quite a few in there. We didn't get through the whole deck, so there's plenty of stuff in there that makes it interesting, because obviously every round's going to be slightly different, because of the daily forecast, because of the favours you can pick up, because of the mercenaries you can hire. And that adds sufficient sort of randomness so that it's not just, Oh, I'll move here. I'll get some of this. I'll then move there and get some ether. Yum, yum, yum. Win. And I really liked it. I thought it was pretty much there. It looks pretty much done to me. So hopefully it will be available to the masses soon.
Yeah, so I've just had a look, actually. It was on Kickstarter last year. So obviously we missed it at the time. So you can go to burning-games.com to find out more information about it, or I'd recommend going to the Kickstarter page, because it was actually on Kickstarter last year. So their goal was €22,000, and they got €24,000, so that's good. It's actually the second time the game had been on there. The original creator of the game launched it the year before, but it didn't fund. And then Burning Games encountered them at a gaming convention and said, oh, we really like this game, we want to help you get it to market. So then they relaunched it last year and did some work on the graphic design and, you know, just general tidying up of the game. And that obviously did the trick and got it funded.
Basically, any game where you get to roll a fistful of tiny dice, I'm there.
Two thumbs up from you, then.
It's great fun.
Okay. Next up was one that we actually didn't get a chance to see because there was a lot of buzz around it. Just like there would be if you drank some coffee. Ha 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 ha. No laugh, right? Okay.
You can put one in post.
No. And that was Seize the Bean, which was the card game about making coffee.
Yes. You're trying to be the best coffee shop in Berlin.
But do you go mass market and make horrible coffee? Or do you go a bit more gourmet?
Yeah. And what attracted me to this was, as I think I've mentioned in the past two episodes, there are tiny sugar cubes and tiny coffee beans.
They do look lovely, I must say.
I say tiny. They are life-size coffee beans and sugar cubes, but they're pretend. But they looked quite... They look fairly realistic. The coffee beans definitely did.
They do. So we managed to take a short video of this, very short, like 20, 30 seconds, if that, and put it in our trade hall video. But the Seize the Bean guys were nice enough to leave us a comment and say, oh, thanks for featuring our game in your video. So if you're listening to this, guys, you're welcome. We can't wait to see how this goes. I'm not sure if it's going to be kickstarted. I would imagine it is.
Yeah, I think it's got the right sort of art style and appeal to do well on Kickstarter. Because it plays off of Berlin arty stylishness.
So just reading the description on BoardGameGeek, the goal of the game is for players to create the best cafe possible, measured by a variety of achievements such as financial success, cafe style, popularity, ratings, and coffee quality. Players do this by adjusting their shop stats, managing their resources, drawing customer cards, managing their queue, and playing various action cards. And as I say, every time we walked past them, they were rammed, weren't they?
Yeah.
So I think that was probably and they were only on a small little stand, you know, hidden away on the far corner, so this might have been one of those hidden gems that not a lot of people knew about. Obviously, where did you find out about this? Was it on the Geek List on Board Game Geek?
I think so. All I remember is seeing some really sort of bright artwork and some little tiny, well, some little pretend sugar cubes, and I was like, ooh, that looks fun.
Yeah.
But I've sort of forgotten the provenance of that image.
Well, there's some people on Board Game Geek who've already put it on their wish list, so...
So hurry up, guys.
Yeah. And last up is War of the Nine Realms from Wotan Games. So yes. We went upstairs on their bus to have a play of this.
Yes, and this was their last year as well.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, play into the stereotype of a lot of gamers being slightly larger than usual, but... I'm not sure how some of them could have sat down in that bus.
I had difficulty.
And as did I.
I think they possibly tried to squeeze a few too many tables in.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of in the ribs.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I'm not sure how I'm getting out of here with all my bags. I'm not even sure how I got in here. But when we were up there, most of the other people up there were children.
Yeah, and it was quite...
Who apparently had no parents.
No, and it was quite toasty as well.
Yes, as it would be being a massive black bus
yeah.
inside a hall at the NEC.
So upstairs on the Wotan bus, we got to play the print and play edition of War of the Nine Realms. It's currently on Kickstarter. It will probably only have a few hours left by the time everyone hears this, but it has successfully funded. And it's basically what we played was a 1v1 Norse-themed like skirmish game where there was a bunch of like a play area made up of hexagons in front of us which had different types of terrain like mountains and sea and just plain old fields. And we each had a bunch of characters and each of them had different abilities, different fighting attributes and different amounts of health. And yeah, it's just a case of moving your players around, attacking the enemy and trying to be the last man standing.
Well, I think you don't have to be the last man standing. You just have to knock out, we have to capture or kill the other person's leader.
Yeah. Now, I thought this was okay. I think the fact that we only played the print and play version might have dampened my enthusiasm slightly, maybe.
Yeah.
But looking at the photos on the Kickstarter campaign, it does look a lot better. The board is a lot more expansive than what we played, because obviously that can accommodate up to four players.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was supposed to be a bigger game aside from the print and play, because one of the special powers of the people... characters was that if another one of this unit dies within X hexagons of this one, then it does power-ups or something. But we only had one of those characters, so it's like, well, what's the point in doing their special power because there are no others?
Yeah.
And it was a bit like, what? But that's sort of why I guessed it was probably a much bigger game in its full glory.
Yeah.
But then I'm not really that fussed about skirmish games. I mean, I don't know how it will work with more people, but it was sort of like you moved all your people and then you tried to shoot or attack and then you ran out of movement and then the next person does it and they move all their people and then they try to attack.
Yeah.
It was very formulaic. But then that was just the print and play 1v1 version, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I never really played any sort of war games or skirmish games when I was younger, so I don't know. Maybe it will appeal to me as a full game, but I don't know. I've never played any skirmish games before, really.
I think the board, because it's made up of a series of tiles that have a number of hexagons on them, the fact that you could have a lot more variety, obviously in the print and play version that we got, you've got the one board, and so you're playing on that time after time. I think being able to reconfigure the battlefield would make the game instantly a lot more replayable.
Yeah.
But also, as you say, having more than two players as well, because obviously you're not just going after the one person. So, you know, what do you do? You have to... 1v1, you know who you're attacking.
Mm.
If there's three or four players, then obviously you have to react constantly to the changing dynamics of who's got the upper hand. So,
yeah.
So I think it's got potential. I'm not necessarily sure it's my type of game, but if you like that kind of thing, then keep your eye open for that. That's War of the Nine Realms from Wotan Games. So let's move on to the big news of the last couple of days, which is E3. So if you're not interested in computer games and stuff, then Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. But for those who are, so the big companies, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, etc., have all had their big unveilings and their presentations about what they are going to be selling over the next 12 months. So let's kick off with Microsoft. So their big announcement was the Xbox One X, previously known as Project Scorpio. So this is...
Really?
Yeah.
Project Scorpio?
Yeah. Did you not know that?
No.
Yeah, it's been called that for months.
What's the difference?
It's a more powerful console, so it's their response... Well, I mean, it's not their response to the PS4 Pro, because they were both more or less announced at the same time, but... It's 4K, it's got faster processor, faster GPU, but it's still an Xbox One. So basically, any Xbox One games you've got will work on this out of the box. Some games will be getting patches to make them look nicer and use the enhanced capabilities. Going forward, Microsoft are going to be selling both strands of Xbox. So you've got the Xbox One X, which is the expensive high-end 4K version, and the S, which is the standard one that they're selling now, which does up to 4K video, but it doesn't actually play games in 4K. You can only watch 4K Blu-rays and things like that. But games will be compatible with both systems. So if you buy a game, you'll be able to play it on either console, but on the One X, it will look better, and it will have better graphics and everything like that. For me personally, I'm not going to get a One X, but I'm hoping this means the One S is going to go down in price, because I'm still stuck on my 360. And I keep holding off on buying an Xbox One. Originally, when I bought one, and then the S came out, I was like, "Oh, I might wait a bit." But then I never ended up getting one. But now this has been announced. I think that might make me get an Xbox One S.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the consoles, I'm still not convinced as to whether they are going to actually be graphically superior to a computer.
No, they're not, but they're...
Because...
It's a different...
Yeah. Oh, you can play on 4K. I don't care.
No.
I don't want a 4K screen. I don't want a 4K TV. It's just another label to sort of eke money out of people. But is the hardware inside that actually going to make it worth paying the money?
Well, it's $499. They reckon most games will run at 60 FPS on it. So, probably. Yeah.
But then, didn't they have the... I can't remember which one it was. Didn't one of them have a thing where it caps everything at 60 FPS?
They all do that. Most consoles don't play games at more than 60 FPS.
Yeah. So, what then is the point in saying, oh, it's got 4K resolution, but we're still capping it at 60 FPS.
Well, I don't know if it's much.
Because, what is the... I mean, you can go, oh, it's 4K resolution, which is basically the new, oh, it's HD. And if you've got terrible eyesight, it's not really going to...
Well, that's
not going to be able to see the finery of 4K. Like, you're not going to be able to see the finery of HD unless you've also got the money to buy the 4K screens.
Yeah.
Which are... still quite expensive. I'm going to go with not worth it. At least not right now. So I remain sceptical on the offerings of the current consoles.
Fair enough.
Because, I mean, I know 60 FPS is perfectly legit to play games on. Not if you're a pro gamer, because 60 FPS. I mean, admittedly, if everybody's playing at 60 FPS,
exactly.
I suppose that evens the field. But if you're used to being able to play at 100 or more FPS, then even if you think you don't notice it, your brain's sort of going, something's wrong. Something's wrong. Even though, yeah, okay, the human eye can only notice up to about 24 FPS, supposedly. It's consciously, I think. It's all the peripheral vision stuff that you don't consciously know that you've realized is there until something attacks you out of the corner of your eye and you're like, oh shit, move. Oh poop. Are we allowed to do swears?
I'm sure it's fine. But spec-wise, it's a reasonable step up from the existing Xbox One. So they're going from a 1.7 gigahertz octo-core AMD CPU to a 2.3 gigahertz AMD CPU. Same number of cores. The GPU, as I say, we don't know exactly what models they are, but it's going up from 914 megahertz, 1.4 teraflops, to 1.17 gigahertz, 6 teraflops. So on raw number crunching, apparently the GPU is, you know, 2.5 times faster. So we'll see. And yeah, from 8 gig of DDR3 to 12 gig of GDDR5.
Yeah, see, this is the other thing that annoys me about the consoles. It's like, well, we're not going to continuously improve one model. We're going to give you this version, which is overpriced compared to what you could do for the same amount for a PC. Or we're going to give you this other version, which is so overspecced compared to the original version, we're going to charge you like 3 times as much money.
Yeah, but they can't go down the route of having so lots of different versions, because that, you know, as you say, people will then not be on an even playing field. Some people will be playing games at 30 FPS at 720p. Some of them, if they've got the cheap one, some of them will be playing at, you know, 120 frames per second. That's the same with a PC, you know, if you can afford to get a faster graphics card, then the game will run better, you know. So I think by limiting to the two SKUs, they're saying that effectively the game will run the same on both. It's just on the Xbox One X, it'll be a high resolution and it will look nicer.
Yeah, but then does looking nicer really warrant that much more money?
For me, no. For some people, yes, it will.
I will remain in the skeptical camp.
So then they announced the next big thing, which is obviously we know that the Xbox One can play most Xbox 360 games via the backwards compatibility scheme. They are extending that so that original Xbox games will be playable on the Xbox One as well, which is quite interesting. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, because architecturally, it can't be that much of a difficult thing to emulate. Obviously, the operating systems on the two platforms were completely different, because obviously the original Xbox came out in 2001, so it's 16 years old. But the original Xbox used an Intel Celeron processor, so it's still x86. So effectively, I think all they've got to do is emulate the operating system and make sure the games don't run too fast, because obviously, you know, 15-year newer processor is going to run it a lot quicker. But I think that's good. There's a lot of original Xbox games that I would love to play again. Crimson Skies has been mentioned as being a very eagerly anticipated one. I used to love Fusion Frenzy. Do you ever play Fusion Frenzy?
No.
It was like a party game, which was like made up of a bunch of little sub-games. And, you know, four of you all got together and just played these little party games against each other. But it was really good. There was a version released for the 360, but it was nowhere near as much fun as the original. So let's whiz through some of the other games that are of interest. I'm not going to go through every single one. Assassin's Creed Origins, that looks good. Setting ancient Egypt, it's a massive prequel. I think it's about the birth of the assassins, hence the word Origins in the title.
Yeah.
Not much I can say, really, at the moment. It's Assassin's Creed. You go around, you kill people, you sneak, sneaky sneak face, and do
stabby
missions.
Stab.
Exactly. State of Decay 2, zombie apocalypse type game. You have to go around shooting zombies. For those people who are interested in Minecraft, they're going cross-platform, so people on different platforms will be able to play against each other. No, I'm not a Minecraft fan myself, but I know that's going to please a lot of people. There was a lot of indie games and a few smaller games.
I think Metro Exodus will appeal to the fans of the originals, because the original was quite cult. And then the second one came out, which was a bit more up-to-date in terms of graphics, and now there's another one coming soon.
Square announced Life is Strange Before the Storm, which is a prequel to the original Life is Strange. This one doesn't, as far as I can tell, doesn't have Max as the main character. You're actually playing as Chloe. I guess it sort of makes sense that they couldn't have a sequel, because without giving anything away, depending on which ending you got, a sequel wouldn't make any sense, because the endings were so different.
Okay. I still haven't played it.
Have you not? Oh, wow. You really need to get on that. It's 2 years old now, nearly.
There's plenty of things that I've had that are 2 years old or even older than that that I haven't played in ages.
Okay.
We are all well aware of my backlog of, everything, entertainment-wise.
Yeah. Crackdown 3. I think I had Crackdown 2, but I was not keen on it. But I think everyone says that was not good. So
we had Crackdown, the original, I think, for the Xbox 360. It was hilarious fun. Or 2. It might have been Crackdown 2. I can't remember.
Well, the page I'm looking at on Kotaku says the game itself looks like multiplayer Crackdown and will hopefully be better than Crackdown 2 was. So I think you probably played the first one based on that sentence.
Yeah, I don't know. Basically, all I remember is climbing up buildings, looking for power-ups.
Okay.
Basically.
And what appeals to me about this is it's got Terry Crews in it, and I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so, Terry Crews is the man. And he's now a member of the PC Master Race, isn't he? So,
if you say so.
Yeah, he asked Reddit and Facebook to help him build his son a PC, because his son was really into computer games and he wanted to get into it with him. And so, they helped him pick all the parts and he put this PC together with his son. And they play Rocket League and all sorts of stuff now.
Cool.
So he's a bit of a gamer. Last thing I want to mention is the new BioWare game, which was Anthem, which looks amazing. So Anthem is BioWare's new open world RPG type game. It's co-op multiplayer with up to 4 other people, so you can work your way through the campaign co-op. But also, thing they showed in the demo was that there were these exosuits you can get, and each one of them has a different power. And in the demo, they showed you one that lets you just fly around, and it looks brilliant. So if you're a fan of BioWare games, I like Mass Effect Andromeda. I really do. I blasted through it a few weeks ago and recently finished it. And I think it's a lot better than a lot of people are giving it credit for. I think there was a lot of bad press when it first came out because of all the bugs, but they've done a lot of work on fixing a lot of those, and I really enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about Anthem because it's going to be a massive release for them. So, Nintendo, I haven't watched the video for the Nintendo one, so I'm just going by what's on this page. So this is going to be quite short. There is a new Kirby game coming to the Switch, apparently. They're making a Pokemon RPG for the Switch. There is a new Yoshi game for the Switch.
I think they're bringing some other old stuff to the Switch.
Yeah.
Most of the Nintendo stuff I sort of glazed over.
Yeah. Mario Odyssey. I'm pretty sure that's going to be for the Switch as well. And the Switch is also getting something else, which was not announced by Nintendo. It was announced by Bethesda. So let's go on to them. So for the Switch, they announced Skyrim.
Because why make another new game? Just port Skyrim to everything.
I think that's the general gist of everyone's thoughts on Reddit at the moment. There's lots of memes about Bethesda just bringing Skyrim to every platform known to man. They did announce Doom VR and Fallout 4 VR.
Which, again, is two games that already exist.
I think Fallout 4, I sort of got partway through and then just stopped. I've still got it installed, I just never got back to it. I keep trying every now and then, but I just can't seem to get into it. One of these days, I'm just going to have to sit down and just go, right, I'm going to spend a good 5 or 6 hours just trying to blast through some of this and see how I go. Maybe that might enthuse me a little bit more. New Wolfenstein game.
Yep. New Dishonored game.
Dishonored, yeah.
And The Evil Within 2. So, sequels, spin-offs.
Ports.
Repeats.
Yeah.
VR versions.
Let's do Sony. Again, again, I haven't watched this, so I'm just going by this article. Uncharted Lost Legacy. I've never played Uncharted because I don't have a PlayStation.
I played it around someone else's house once, and I quite enjoyed it, which is also one of the reasons why I would get a PS4 over a Xbox One.
Oh, okay.
Purely because the Uncharted ones are quite fun.
The new Spider-Man game?
Yeah.
It says here it's hotly influenced by the Arkham games. Well, that's not bad. I mean, you know, the Arkham games were good. So if they can make a Spider-Man game that sort of is in that same vein, then I think they'll have a pretty good success.
And from the stills, it's not as dark, literally speaking. It looks like there's daylight and it's not pissing down with rain constantly.
Well, I think actually that sort of ties in with the general tonal difference between the Marvel movies and the DC movies generally.
Yeah.
The DC movies are just darker.
Whereas with the TV versions, I've found the Marvel ones to be a lot darker, especially all the Netflix ones. Daredevil, very grim. Luke Cage, quite grim. Generally, they're all quite dark and depressing and difficult to get into.
Okay.
From my point of view. Whereas the Marvel ones, the DC ones, Arrowverse anyway, not Gotham. The Arrowverse ones are a lot easier to sort of sit and watch. Because the Flash is quite... I've only seen the first series, but it's still quite sort of light.
Okay.
It's not dark and grim and everybody's going to die and it's so depressing that we might as well all just go to sleep. Sometimes Arrow can get a bit like that, but you'll just envisage yourself slapping him around the face going, oh, stop being such a whingy bastard. But yes, anyway, other games from Sony.
Yeah, a load of VR games, including Skyrim.
Yay.
Detroit. Oh, I saw the trailer for Detroit, actually. This one looks quite good. You play as androids, but I think... and you're uprising against the human oppressors or whatever it is. But I think... I'm sure I read somewhere that when you die, you just move into another one.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So you go through the story as an android, but then if you die, then you get to pick up elsewhere, but yeah, as a different android.
There's a Horizon Zero Dawn expansion.
I've never even heard of Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, Matthew.
What have
tisk,
I like?
Tisk. Ashley Birch did the voice for the main character.
It's just because it's a PlayStation 4 game. If I don't own the console, I tend to sort of like these things just pass me by.
Well, you've heard of like The Last of Us, surely?
Yeah, but that's like one of the most talked about games, even though people don't give stuff away. But everyone was talking about how emotional The Last of Us was and things like that. So,
yeah, so that's a PS4 exclusive or a PS exclusive. What else have they got? Days Gone, which is a post-apocalyptic game involving zombies.
Yeah.
Apparently, it looks like it will let you manipulate zombie hordes into taking out camps of humans.
Oh, that's an interesting twist then.
Slightly different variation on your regular zombie stuff. They're remaking Shadow of the Colossus, another God of War game.
So last up on my list of the big ones is Ubisoft. Mario plus Rabbids, which is a open world exploration, turn-based fighting game like XCOM. So XCOM with Mario. Okay.
Mm.
The Crew 2. The Crew is an online racing game, open world. This one brings dirt bikes and planes. Transference, a creepy and mysterious VR game.
Although they didn't give away much more than that.
Yeah. Skull and Bones, a piratey-themed game. Actually, it's Skull and Bones takes the pirate stuff that everyone liked in Black Flag, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and removes all the Assassin's Creed stuff. So actually, that could be quite good. I really like Black Flag, and I know a lot of other people that did as well.
Yes, yeah. Chris really liked Black Flag. primarily for the sailing around.
Yeah.
Being a piratey person.
So this might go down very well.
Mm-hmm.
Starlink, Battle of Atlas. Has you attaching toys to your game controller? Okay. Intriguing. Far Cry 5, I think that was a given.
Yep, and of course it has a dog.
It follows you around and kills things for you, presumably.
Yep, so everybody's going to love it because everybody loves dogs. Dogs in games.
Yep, and Beyond Good and Evil 2.
It's, I believe it's actually a prequel to the story in Beyond Good and Evil.
Oh, okay.
And then I think the only other one that I spotted was under the EA stuff, A Way Out, which is that co-op prison break game set in the 60s or something. And it's permanent split screen. You literally cannot do a solo play.
Oh, yes, I did see this. You're right, yeah.
And while the first time I saw it, I was like, don't know. I could see it being enough of a unique selling point that it will still do well, because it comes from the guys who made Tale of Two Brothers, which did quite well. I reckon people will go for it because it's different, which, considering quite a lot of the rest of E3 was spin-offs, sequels, ports and VR versions of stuff that exists.
Yeah.
Having something that's different, like a permanent split-screen prison break, which you can play local co-op or online co-op, apparently, I think people will probably go for it just because it's something new.
Actually, I've just realised there was something I missed out from the Sony one, which, again, I thought was quite new. So I'll just jump back and talk about that here. And that was Hidden Agenda, which is an interesting game where a group of you are playing together, but you've all got like an app on your phone. And okay. As the game plays, there are quick time events that determine how the story progresses, like will a character live or die. And people vote for these decisions. But then also, everyone's got a secret objective. So you're all sort of like on the surface playing together to progress the story, but each of you has got a secret objective that you've got to try and get through without anyone else realising what it is. And they had a brief video of people playing that, and I saw that, and I thought that looked quite interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that anything like that done before.
No. I assume it's based on the PlayLink.
Yes, it is PlayLink, yeah.
Yeah. See, that's another thing that sort of makes PS4 a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Because you can do that. You can link a lot easier with the Vita and your regular console than you can with the Xbox. Because there isn't a handheld Xbox. And let's face it, Xbox for Microsoft Windows is horrendous and awful. Abomination.
So back to EA. Sorry for that brief diversion. Star Wars Battlefront 2. I never played Battlefront, but I know a lot of people enjoyed it. But this one's actually going to have a decent single-player campaign in it, as well as lots of new multiplayer stuff. Apparently all the multiplayer things they're going to be doing in this are free, so you won't have to keep buying new maps. Because I think the problem with the original was the player base got very fragmented. Need for Speed Payback. It's a Need for Speed game.
Yeah. Another Battlefield.
That's extra maps and things for Battlefield 1.
Okay. Bunch of sports.
Yeah, Madden, FIFA, NBA. It's EA. They've got to do it every year, haven't they?
They could do something else. Basically, EA, Star Wars, Anthem, A Way Out, racing, fighting, sports.
Yeah.
The end.
And that is the end. That is the end of this show. We're not sure when the next episode will be, because obviously...
I am moving house.
Someone's moving very soon, yes. So we're not sure when we're going to be able to record the next one, so hopefully this will tide you over until then.
Hopefully.
So if you want to follow us on the social media platforms, just look for us on Twitter or Instagram. We are at Todcast. And you can also just search Facebook for The Offline Gamer or go to facebook.com/Todcast.
You can visit us at www.offlinegamer.co.uk for back episodes, links to our videos and review articles.
You can just search directly for the podcast if none of that interests you. soundcloud.com/offlinegamer or just search for The Offline Gamer on iTunes.
And if you want to get in touch and Twitter isn't your thing, nor is Facebook, then we also have email. So it's offlinegamerpodcast@gmail.com, or there is a contact form on the website.
So thanks everyone for listening to us again for another episode. We really appreciate it. And hi to any new listeners we've picked up. I know that since our UKG episode, we've had a few new subscribers looking at our download stats. So thank you very much and welcome. And we'll see you all at some point in the future. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.